Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, so let's go over quickly what we did last week. So we began our third episode of Yaakov and Esav. The third episode begins as Yaakov is on his return back from his uncle Laban's house, where he spent some 20 years, amassing 4 wives, 11 children, and great wealth. And now he's on his way back to the land of Israel, as Hashem had told him to go back, and he prepares for his meeting. As we read, let's just do it very, very quickly. On his way back in verse 4, verse 4, Vayishal Yaakov sends his angels to his brother, to Esav, and he tells them to say that I'm coming, I've lived with Laban, I've become very wealthy, and I'm telling you all this to find favor in your eyes. And we'd ask the question as to, what's the meaning of I'm telling this to find favor in your eyes? We'll get to that as we go back over this. So the message comes to Esav, your brother is wealthy, he's on his way back, and he wants to find favor in your eyes. The angels return, and they say to Yaakov, we told your brother. They don't give us any indication as to how he responded to that emotionally, but that he's going out to meet you with 400 of his men with you, which Yaakov understands to be a sign of war. He becomes extremely afraid, Yaakov is, and he splits his camp into two, in verses 8 and 9, and he says to no one in particular, if Esav indeed attacks and destroys one of my camps, at least the other camp will be able to survive. So he immediately goes into defensive mode. That's his first response, to protect himself as best as possible by dividing up the camp. Then he launches into a prayer, which we went through. It was a four sections of prayer, starting with verse 10, in which he says, he puts it in context, you are the God of my father Abraham and my father Yitzchak, and you are the one who said to me, return to your birthplace and I will do good for you. So he develops the relationship in his opening line, which we thought made a lot of good sense, as we do every time we daven Shmona Esrei. We begin by setting the context of Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. And then in verse 11, he comes with his humility and submission and appreciation, and he says, I have become small from all the kindnesses and the truth that you have rendered for your servant, because I crossed this Jordan originally 20 years ago with nothing, only with the staff that's in my hand, and now look at me, you have given me everything, 4 wives, 11 children, and all this great wealth that needs 2 separate camps even to contain it. Then, verse 12, he comes in part 3 with his specific request, deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esav, the double language, my brother, the hand of Esav, I am afraid lest he come and strike me and strike down the mother with the children. That's his specific request. And then number 4, part 4, which is verse 13, which we thought was the most eyebrow-raising segment of his tefillah, and he says, and you said, I will surely do good to you, make your seed as numerous as the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted because of multitude. End of his prayer service. So those are the first two reactions that Yaakov has in preparing for war. Number one is a defensive action of splitting the camps into two for protection. Number two is a little prayer that he offers, a tefillah, which we just went through, is comprised of 4 different components. But that's element number 2 of his preparation, is that of tefillah. Just to go over, because we're going to hit this again today, if you remember the way that Yaakov related to his brother Esav, we noted a number of instances of that, whether or not how he calls his brother. That in the beginning of our story, in verse 4, verse 5, when he commands the angels, he says, so shall you say to my master, to Esav, so has your servant Yaakov said. And I have sent to tell you this to my master to find favor. That Yaakov refers to him, even in discussing just with the angels, and then certainly what the angels should say to Esav, as you are my master, and correct. And then the angels respond and they say, your brother Esav said, we told your brother and he is coming out to meet you. And now we'll see that theme is going to come up again as we go on. Okay, so far so good. That was our little brief reminder of what we accomplished last week. Let's pick up with verse Yudalid, Pasuk 14. So again, this is after his prayers. Vayolin shom balayla hahu. He lodged there on that night. Vayikach min habav v'yado mincha le'esav achiv. And he took from what came into his hand a gift for his brother Esav. Comments, questions. Verse 14. What's irrelevant in this verse?
Well, this is the first we've heard that Asaph gave him a gift.
Well, he didn't give him a gift.
He took from what came into his hand.
Okay, what is it?
Oh, a gift for him. Okay, I'm sorry.
I know, which means he took from what came into his hand, which is a way of saying the wealth that he's amassed.
Mm-hmm.
Let's note that the way that it's described is from what came into his hand, which is an interesting way of describing it, but it's simply a way of saying he took from the wealth that he's amassed into his hand a gift for his brother Esav. So first of all, let's note, of course, as I just set up a moment ago, how does the Torah, now again, this is a narration, this is nobody speaking here, how does the Torah narrate the relationship between Yaakov and Esav here? As a brother. He took it for a gift for his brother Esav. Is there any phrase or part of this verse that you would say is really irrelevant and doesn't tell us anything?
He lodged the brother
that night. He lodged there that night. Excellent. What do we get out of that? Let's say the Torah didn't say that. Let's say the Torah said, the angels came back and they said to Yaakov, he's coming out to meet you, he's got 400 men. And so Yaakov divided up his camp, and he offered up a prayer service, and then he took from his hand a gift for Esav. Would we have asked the question, did that take 2 hours or 10? Did he do that on one day? Did he divide it up over 2 days? How long did it take him to divide up his camp? Did he spend the night? Did he not spend the night? Well, does it matter?
Well, surely it does matter. And I mean,
why is
it tells me that he felt comfortable enough to stay there that night and rest there and sleep there
is he about to happen upon him?
Well,
so we're going to see in the story that there's still a distance away because we got a ways to go with all these gifts to get there. So it seems like it's certainly going to be a little bit of time. But you have a suggestion as a meaning. In other words, let's start with the question. Why is the Torah telling us that he slept there that night? I would have said, I don't know, and if it wouldn't have told us that, I wouldn't have. Okay, so he did sleep there, he didn't sleep there, whatever. However long it took until he got his camp divided and he davened and then he sent his gift and whatever, I don't know.
No.
So we'll leave that as a question. So clearly there's some element of having lodged there that night. We have a suggestion as to show us the comfort that he had. We'll see what else is there. Okay, so far so good. So now again, we've divided up the camp, we had our tefillah, and now we're beginning the third element of preparation. The sages point out, as we will note as well here, Yaakov is preparing for war, and there are three major components to preparing for war. Number one was a defensive mode of getting himself ready. Number two is tefillah. And number three we have here, appeasement. He's actually trying to now send gifts and see if he can get out of the whole thing, which he's going to begin to do. Let's take a look at the gift that he sends. Verse 15, Pasuk Tezvav, Izin Ma'asayim, 200 female goats, Usyashim Esrim, 20 he-goats, Rechelim Masayim, 200 rams, ewes, or a female a ram sheep, Ve'elim Esrim, and 20 male rams. Let's just finish up the list. One more pasuk in Tezayin on the other side of your page. Gmalim Meinikos, Uvnehem Shloshim, 30 nursing camels with their young. Paros Arboim, 40 cows. Ufarim Asarah, 10 bulls. Asonos Esrim, 20 she donkeys, the Ayorim Asarah, and 10 he donkeys. Okay, two verses describing to great detail what the gift was. Okay, comments, thoughts as to what do we get from this?
I just added up 450 animals were traveling with him, plus all those people, and he expected to be actually move them in a hurry.
Okay, excellent. Now that is a great point. We're going to get that in a lot of different ways. Let's break down. Learns like this is the point. What did this guy? What did he actually send you? Added up how many different animals? What'd you come up with?
I come up with a total of 450.
450. So is this a small gift or a large gift? I think an enormous gift. 450 animals is an enormous gift. Now this is not even the extent of his wealth. This is just a part of it. Now we don't know whether or not it's half, if it's a third, if it's two-thirds, or if it's a tenth. We don't know what percentage of his gift, but he clearly had great wealth, even just the gift that he sent. Now the comments,
560 is what I got.
You came up with 560?
I didn't have that one.
I hadn't counted it, so what do we have? 200 she-goats and 220?
230.
420? 440, 450, 490, 500, 520, 530. I got quickly just now. What did you come up with?
Well, did you count the camels with their young? I counted only one young with each camel.
Oh, I didn't count the young. I got 430 without this. Okay, so five. Assuming each camel had a young, at least 560. That's fine. It might even be more if each camel had more than that. So we have at least 560 animals. Let's get the more accurate number down there. 560 animals were sent just as the gift to Esav. Okay, so comment number one is he's sending an enormous gift, as we mentioned. So when Esav sees this gift coming, this is an entire flock that's now coming forward as this gift to him. Number two, it tells us the great wealth that Yaakov obviously had. And number three, which we're going to see in a moment as we get to the end of this story, Yaakov is traveling with four wives, 11 children, and clearly a tremendous amount of livestock. How fast does that party travel through the wilderness on its way back to Eretz Yisrael? Obviously, very, very slowly. Esav traveling with his 400 soldiers is going to travel at a pace indescribably quicker than Yaakov will travel with his flock.
Now he'll have more to take care of.
If he accepts the gift, 100%, right? Unless he sells it all, pockets the cash, and then moves on. But even that will weigh him down. Okay, so let's just, so in other words, so what we see right away from the gift, we're not going to spend much time on it. When we see Rashi, we'll see. What do we note about the proportions of the gift?
More males than females.
Other way around?
Female. More females,
right?
Than males.
Far more females than males. Like, way more. And Rashi will come and we'll see it inside that was based on Yaakov's knowledge of mating patterns and what was necessary. How many males did you need for the females? So you don't need an equal proportion because once a female is carrying a young or pregnant or whatever it may be, so then, you know, the male is available to deal with the other elements of the flock. So the proportions are different. And Yaakov, aware of all that, was clearly letting Esav know, not only did he have expertise, but was giving him a gift that would yield the maximum amount of future flock as well, as we see within the gift that he's giving him. So he's not just sending him a random, you know, like, oh, here, take this and take that. And take. He's sending him a very large gift that was clearly thought out to yield a maximum amount. Okay, but let's move on. Yeah.
I also noticed no male camels.
Okay, interesting. 30 nursing camels with their young, and I don't have the explanation for that, but that's interesting. Okay.
Well, I guess maybe as long as they had young, the young
males. That was
female,
it. And that was it. Maybe camels only, I don't know, mate or breed. I don't know. Interesting point. Okay, let's move on. Yud Zayin, 17. Vayitain b'yad avadov eider levado. He gave into the hands of his servants each herd individually. So he divides up this enormous gift of over 560 animals into separate individual herds. It sounds to me like each set of animals is viewed as its own herd. I'm not positive about that. That's what it would sound like. So that you would have whatever it would be, the goats separately from the ewes, separately from the camels, separate from the cows, separate from the donkeys.
Is that because of the issue of mixing, or does that
so come? No, certainly not for any halachic reason, because they're just traveling together. So it sounds like he divided up into five different, if you just view the different types of animals, you have, again, goats, rams, we have camels, we have cows, and we have donkeys. So there are five different types of animals that comprise this gift of 560. So it sounds like he gave into the hands of the servants each herd. Did I miscount that?
Well, I'm separating males and females just like it's separated here.
And if you did that, if you separated types of animals, you know, putting males and females together, you would have
two, three, four, five.
If you divided that,
six, seven,
then I guess you'd have
nine.
You would have nine different, because there are five different types of animals, and the camels only have females, so you would have nine if you did it like that. So I don't know exactly how he divided it, whether he divided them into nine groups or into five groups, whatever it may be. And he says to his servants, Ivru lefanai, pass on ahead of me, the revach tasimu ben eider uvein eider. You guys go up ahead, so that I'll be behind you, and we'll put space in between one herd and another, so that, you know, every 6 hours, I don't know what it would be, another group will show up at Esav's door with another large gift. Again, there are 560 total animals. So if we do divide it up into nine, just imagine that experience of every 6 hours or 3 hours, another gift of 20, 40, 100, too much animals show up. Okay, Vayitzaves Harishon Lemor, and then he commanded the first servant, saying, Ki yifgashcha Esav achi, when my brother Esav meets you, Usheelcha lemor, and he will say you, Lemiata, to whom do you belong? Ve'ona seilech, and where are you going? Ulemi eile lefanecha, and whom are these before you? To whom do these belong? Let's rewind our verse to get the whole thought together. 19, Pasuk Yetes, V'yamarta la'avdecha, you shall say, quote, excuse me, V'yamarta, you shall say, quote, La'avdecha li'Yakov, I belong to your servant Yaakov. Mincha yishlucha la'adoni la'esav, this is a gift being sent to my master Esav. V'hine gam hu acharenu, and he is also behind us, end quote.
He was also given, the servant was also being given. He says, my master to Esau. Sent to my master to Esau.
Okay, I'm not sure if that means, that seems just saying, I don't know that that's true. Or whether or not he's just saying that I am to Yaakov and I'm sending him this gift. Okay, a lot of things to talk about here. So 18 and 19. So he commands the first one. Let's go. What are all the comments we have in the way that, what do we have here?
Constantly that brother Esau. Why they always have to say it's redundant.
Okay, so here let's talk about that first one. In verse Yitches, Pasuk 18, verse 18, he commands the first one saying, and now again, remember when he commanded the angels. There are two parts to the talk. One is as I'm talking to the angel, and I identify my brother Esav as to whom you're going to be speaking to, and then I tell you what you should say to him. So if you flip back to verse 4, or verse 5 really, he commanded them saying, so shall you say to my master to Esav, this is just talking to the angel, so shall you say to my master to Esav, quote, thus says your servant Yaakov. Now let's contrast that with what goes on over here when he's speaking not to the angels but to his servant. What does he say?
My brother.
When he's talking to the servant, he says, when you meet up with my brother, with Esav. But then, quote, how should you address him?
My master.
So that he still wants Esav to hear that he's the master and Yaakov is referring to himself as the servant. But now when he's talking to the servant himself, he addresses him as my brother Esav. Now there are two possibilities to that. Number one is difference between when he's talking to an angel and when he's talking to his servant. That even Yaakov is not willing to refer to himself as a servant to Esav in talking to his own servant. Or maybe he got the message, which was hinted at by the angels themselves when they returned and they said, we met up with your brother Esav, and they refused to call him your master, and maybe Yaakov saw that. It's one thing to address Esav himself that way because of what I'll accomplish. It's another thing to still talk that way when I'm only addressing my own servants. I don't know, but that's interesting to note. Okay, what else do we have in verses 18, 19?
In 18, where it says, for whom are these before you?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ordinarily, if you meet somebody, you don't ask who do these things belong to.
You assume that they're theirs.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. So let's talk about that in a bigger picture. If you were Yaakov and you were sending out these servants, and you got to construct, you know, you're not working through the Chumash, and I say, like, how would you speak to your servant? What's their mission? How would we define the mission of their servant?
To carry out what he wants.
What's that? What does he want?
To give over the herds.
Right? So how would you speak to your servant? I would say, here's a gift. What should you do? Go find Esav and give these to him. That's how I would say it. And Yaakov commanded his servant, saying, go ahead of me, find my brother Esav, and say to him, these are my gifts for you. How does Yaakov say this? Well, look carefully at 18.
He says, when Esav asks you something.
When my brother Esav meets you, and asks you, saying, when he initiates the kahiz, when he meets you, and he initiates the dialogue and says, who are you? To whom do you belong? Where are you going? And who do these items belong to? Then you should respond to him and say, I belong to your master, your servant, Yaakov, and this is a gift that he sent to you. Very interesting. I would not have done it that way. Why not say it straight? Go find him and initiate and say, my dear brother Esav, or my master Esav, your brother Yaakov is sending you a gift. But instead he says, when Esav meets you, when he meets up with you, when he will, and Yaakov knows he's going to ask these three questions. why is Yaakov putting these three questions in Esau's mouth? Just say, find him and give him a gift. Who cares if he has these questions or not? That's not the objective. Is give him these gifts. So it's very interesting the way that Yaakov presents this to his servants. Yaakov, Esau will meet you. He will have three questions for you. To whom do you belong? How does he know that you're servants? Apparently, the way that they were dressed or something, it was obvious that they were servants of somebody. So that Esau's first question is, to whom do you belong? You're not independent. I don't know if it was like so obvious that they couldn't possibly be so wealthy. They have all these animals. I don't know. But Yaakov assumes that Esau will ask three questions when he runs into the first servant carrying all of these animals. You're a servant, so my first question is, to whom do you belong? Since you're a servant carrying all these animals, where are you going with them? And, as Nina pointed out, to whom are these before you? Well, obviously, they belong to, it would seem, either the servant or the servant's master. So that's an interesting question. But Yaakov presents to his servants that that's the way it's going to happen. Esau is going to meet you. He's going to ask you these three questions. And then in response to these three questions, verse 19, you shall say, I belong to your servant Yaakov. Now when the servant is talking to Esau, he refers to Yaakov as Esau's servant. This is a gift sent to my master, to Esau. And behold, he himself is behind us. What else would you add to verse 19 that's missing here? Now I'll give you a hint. This is Yaakov's second attempted communication. What has he done the first time that he doesn't do here? There's a phrase in the first communication that I think would be very appropriate here that's interesting to me that's not here.
That he wants to find favor.
Exactly. In verse 6, in the opening of our story, Yaakov commands the angels to say, I've been with Lavan, I've acquired great wealth, and you want to know why I'm telling you all this? I'm telling you that I've been with Lavan for 20 years and acquired great wealth, limtzechein be'einecha, to find favor in your eyes. I have an objective, Esav, I want to be friendly with you. The angels go, they come back, we don't know if it worked, it didn't work, we don't know anything. The Torah doesn't tell us, all the Torah tells us, the angels report, he's coming out. So Yaakov becomes afraid, and he thinks there's going to be a war. So he goes into the three-pronged mode of Jewish preparation for war. He splits his camp, he gets into a defensive mode, he davens, and now he sends an appeasement. So wouldn't you think in the appeasement, in the gifts that he's sending, he would say, and I'm sending you this gift to find favor in your eyes. Maybe yes, maybe no, he doesn't. So what he does say is that the servants should say, we belong to Yaakov. I'm sending this gift to you, Esav. And behold, he's behind us. He's there, but he doesn't actively or overtly say that the objective here is to find favor in your eyes. Yeah.
But his whole objective is not to engage in war with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first step was, you know, that first meeting to say to find favor in your eyes to sort of, you know, soften him a little, I guess. And now he's behind you, maybe to instill a little strength there, you know, that Esav should, he himself should feel a little something, no?
Feel something like what?
A little fear, no?
You think this is to make Esav be afraid?
Well,
would it work?
Not really afraid, but just to show that Yaakov comes from a little bit more strength than what Esav would necessarily.
If you were Esav, is this approach that would be the one to show the one sending the gift is from a position of strength, or not?
I don't think this
does not send off a message of I'm the one in position of strength. I'm here sending you gift after gift after gift. Right, it's an appeasement. So let's continue this conversation. Let's read two more verses and then go back to this point. Let's read 20 and 21. Pasuk Chaf 20. Vayitzav gamis hasheni, gamis hashlishi. He commanded also the second one and the third one. Gamis kol hahochem acharei ha'adrim. All those who followed the herds, Leimor saying, kadavar hazet tedabrun el Esav b'motzoachem oso. So shall you speak to Esav when you literally meet, or literally I would say find or meet him. So the quote that we had as to what the first one should say, they're all going to say that. They're all going to say, in response to any questions that Esav might have, we belong to Yaakov, and we are sending this gift to you, and Yaakov is behind us. 21, Ve'amartem, and you should also say, Gam hine avdecha Yaakov acharenu, behold, your servant Yaakov is behind us. Ki omar, for he said, Yaakov said, Achapra ponov b'mincha, I will appease his anger with the gift that is going before me. V'acharichein era ponov, and then afterwards I will see his face. Ulai yiso fanai, perhaps he will favor me. So that Yaakov tells us, or the Torah tells us, what Yaakov was thinking to himself, even though this phrase is not what's actually communicated to Esav. Esav is not told that this was an appeasement gift to find favor. Esav is only told, this comes from your servant Yaakov, and behold, he is after us, behind us. So it's possible, let's put on the table, that in other words, that Yaakov is thinking, in my mind, I'm thinking only appeasement. But I'm doing it in a way that puts me in a position of strength. It certainly puts me in a position of great wealth. The original message I sent through the angels stated I have great wealth, but you know what? Anyone can say they're very wealthy, but not everyone can back it up. So that I sent the angels, and Esav sort of disregarded it, he comes out with his 400 men. But now I'm sending him for good. I'm actually sending him a flock of 560 animals, sent Eder Levado, one flock at a time, one herd at a time, to space it out, to maximize the effect of how large the gift is. And I don't say overtly that I'm doing this to find favor in your eyes. In my mind, the Torah tells us, Yaakov said, I'm doing this to find favor in his eyes so that I could appease him, and therefore when I see him, I won't have to confront him. But to Esav, I only say it's coming from a gift from your servant Yaakov, and behold, he is behind us. So he clearly still identifies himself as the servant that he does. Was it to show a position of strength? I don't know. We can debate whether or not it actually puts him in a place of strength or whether or not it's clear that it's an appeasement. But that's how Yaakov, that's phase three of his plan. He divides up the camp, he davens, and then he sends this gift, which clearly in his mind, as verse 21 tells us, was a gift of appeasement in order to win favor from Esav and not have to deal with the confrontation. Okay, any other comments in verses 20 or 21? So, again, in verse 21, what the Torah tells us he's thinking is not that. The Torah is simply saying, I will appease his anger with the gift that is going before me. In other words, what we're actually told is that Yaakov has an assumption that Esav is angry. Does Yaakov know that Esav is angry? All we know is that it's been 20 years. When I sent him the angels that I'm coming back, what was Esav's response? He's coming out to greet him with 400 men. So he assumes he's angry.
But also, he allowed him to sleep there that night. He's not so aggressive immediately, at least. He didn't show aggression immediately.
Right, we have that night's rest. So it's unclear whether or not they were that close together where they would have otherwise confronted. But some of the Torah tells us there was a night there. Why is that irrelevant to us? We'll see if any of the commentators have what to say, which they do.
Yaakov was aware that Esau was there with the 400 men. He had already been told this.
Correct.
So he knew that he had that time to that he wasn't being immediately aggressive.
Right.
But he knows that Esau may not accept, he'll take these gifts and he still will kill.
100%. In other words, this is a three-pronged attempt at war. In other words, you try, first he gets defensive, he divides up the camp, protection, he davens, and then he attempts an appeasement. And this is clearly an attempted appeasement that has no guarantee of success.
Right.
That's right. You do everything you can to protect. In other words, again, once again, we're setting up a scenario in which Yaakov is working with the assumption, which seems accurate, that there is no way, under normal circumstances, he can overpower or defeat his brother Esav. Esav is coming with an army of 400, and he has 11 children and 4 wives and a couple of and some servants. Well, clearly, we're not soldiers. He's got servants and maidservants and flock. So there's no battle to be had. It's an army attacking civilians. So Chav Beis. So that's Yaakov's. That's his three-pronged approach to getting ready to deal with his brother. He's hoping not to have to certainly not to have to fight. Okay, Chav Beis. Vatavor hamincha al panov. Now, if you're reading it in the Hebrew, you'll see the word panav many times in Chaf Aleph and Chaf Beis. In 21, Achapra panav lami, appease his face. Bamincha ha'olachas lifanai, that goes before me, panai my face. Achrein erev panav, then I'll see his face. Ulai yisa panai, he will find favor. But the word favor in Hebrew is, again, with the word, he will favor my face. So that there are at least, what's that, one, two, three, four words of the word panai in verse 21 in Pasuk Chaf Aleph. And then Chaf Beis, Vatavur hamincha al panav, the gift pass on before him. Again, using the word panav, it passed before his face. V'hulan v'layla hahu v'machanen, he lodged that night in the camp. And again, what questions or comments we have in Chaf Beis 22?
Is this the second night?
Okay, what, here we have a lot of lodging at night here, right? They're telling it to us. So he sets up, he had slept one night, and then it sounded like he divided up all of his stuff, because the original lodging, what verse was that? That was in verse 14. He lodged there on that night, and he took from what he came into his hand as a gift. It sounds like that was the next day. Divides up all of his gift, sends his people out in a...
formation.
In a formation, one after another, with space in between them.
Uh-huh.
The gift passed on before him in verse 22, and he lodged that night in the camp. It sounds like that's then the next one. So we're told about the night before the gift was divided, and then we're told about the night after the gift.
Uh-huh.
Now, verse 23, and he arose during that night. Now we ask, well, why is this relevant? Well, at least now the Torah is going to tell us something about that night, why we're being informed that he went to sleep that night. Vayakom b'laylohu, he arose during that night. Vayikach es shtei nashav, v'estei shifchoysav, he took his two wives and his two maidservants. V'es achad asar yiladov, and his 11 children. Vayavor es ma'avar yabok, and he crossed over Yabok, the is the name of the river. And he crossed this, I don't know, the ford of the Yabok River. So somehow we're told now, some in the middle of the night, he gets up, he takes his two wives and his two maidservants, his four total wives and his 11 children, and he passes over the Ma'avar Yabok. I'm going to read one more verse before I ask the next obvious question. Vayikachem, and he took them. Vayavirem es hanachal, and he brought them across this little nachal. It originally was called a ma'avar, now it's called a nachal. Vayaver es asher lo, and he brought across all that was with him. So we're introducing what's known as a very famous story. Now that we're actually reading it inside, this is a real interesting introduction of the story. Like, what's going on? If we're like reading the story, what's happening here?
Earlier, we were told that he divided the camp into two. Yet now...
everybody seems to be all together. Very good, right? It seems like the camp had been divided. And either he didn't do it yet, even though it sounded like he did. The language in verse Ches, Pasuk 8... is that it was done already. He divided the people, Vayachas Asa'am Asherito, into two machanos. It sounded like they're already divided. So, and now he's crossing them over. So if that just means that he crossed over one camp, then another camp, I guess that would be the simplest explanation. But we're certainly presented his family as one unified element at this point. And he took over the four wives, and the two wives and the two maidservants, as they're referred to us, and the 11 children, and he crossed them over. He took all of these things. At the end of the day, what question would we ask on this? But the big question is, like, why are we being told all of this? Where is Yaakov coming from? His uncle Laban's house. Where is he going? Back to Eretz Yisrael. How many streams are there in between Laban's house and, I don't know, is this the only one? I don't know. What's the goal? What are we being told this for? That in the middle of the night he went to sleep after sending the gift to Ether. We're in the middle of a really dramatic story. Now, if you really think about where we are in context, if you were scripting this as a play, so we're in the middle of the high drama.
Mm-hmm.
Esav is coming out to greet him. Yaakov is afraid, and he's sending gifts. And he's sending gifts with the attempt at appeasing his brother that he shouldn't have a confrontation. He finishes sending off the last gift. If you were scripting this, and you were the producer, and you were trying to create the scene, so you would have Yaakov, you know, late at night, you know, wringing his hands and with great anxiousness, wondering what's going to happen. And the Torah tells us he goes to sleep that night, and then he gets up in the middle of the night, and what does he do? he moves his family across this river. Was it safer on the other side of the river? Is he moving towards Esav, or is he moving away from Esav? Is he moving closer or farther from Esav?
It looks to me like he's putting them there to protect them.
So if he's doing it to protect them, it certainly makes sense as far as the context, and maybe he felt he was really in imminent danger, that Esav was right around the corner and he had to do it in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. So, but it, we're told all of this information, that there was this Ma'avar Yabok, the ford of the Yabok, which is later called the Nachal, a stream. And Yaakov, in the middle of the night, feels the need to move everybody across, his two primary wives, his two shifchas, his 11 children, and Eis Kol Asher Lo, all that he has, all of them are included in being moving them across.
I was thinking he's moving to a place where if he has to escape, it'll be easier, you know, like...
Okay, so we can make all these are fair assumptions, that it was for the purpose of protection, that it was somehow going to help with the dividing up of the camp, unclear. Mm-hmm. But we're not told that. We are told that he moves them across. Now, what seems to become relevant, and whether or not it justifies the two previous tzvukim or not, I don't know, we'll see, but is the next pasuk, 25, pasuk chafei, vayivaser Yaakov levado. What happens in this process? Why he was moving them, we are not told. What was his objective, we're not told. But what happens as a result of all of that is Yaakov ends up by himself.
On the other side of the stream.
On the other side. He's left alone.
So where are they?
Right, so it sounds like everybody gets crossed over, mm-hmm. and Yaakov gets left alone.
But it says he crossed.
Good. So the sages are going to be bothered by that, and we're going to see what had happened. The famous statement the sages make that he went back because he forgot a couple of small little vessels. That's what's going to come up over here. But we're just reading the story, which is what we're doing right now. Again, we're in the middle of the drama of his meeting up with his brother Esav. He just sent the gift. He wakes up in the middle of the night and says, "We got to cross over this ford over here." Crosses everybody over. I agree with you. The implication of the psukim is he has also crossed over. And then we're told he's left alone. Where is he left alone? I don't know. So in the middle of this, everybody crosses over. He's left alone. Vayeovik ish imo, and a man wrestled with him ad alos hashachar, until dawn. Now, if you were reading this with a secular pair of glasses, without chazal, without the sages of the oral law, you would literally be scratching your head saying, what? So he crossed everybody, he's left alone. Why is he left alone? He's with all of his servants and his 11 children and his four wives, and then a man came and wrestled with him until the break of dawn, because we know this is in the middle of the night, because he went to sleep there, and he woke up in the middle of the night and said, we can't stay here, we have to cross over. So he crosses everybody over. Is left alone, a man wrestles with him until the break of dawn. Vayar ki lo yacholo. And then this man saw that he could not prevail against him. Vayigo bekafi recho. So he touched the socket of his hip. Vateko kafierach Yaakov. And Yaakov's hip became dislocated. Behe ovko imo, as he wrestled with him.
That when he saw he could not prevail against him.
Excellent. Now, as Dina's pointing out, if you stopped after the first phrase, it wouldn't even be clear whether or not it was Yaakov who saw that he couldn't prevail against the angel, or who this man, or it was this man who couldn't prevail against Yaakov. Vateka kavierach Yaakov beheavko imo, and therefore the socket of Yaakov's hip became dislocated as he wrestled with him. Vayomer shalcheini, and then he said, send me. Again, without the English, somebody, he said, send me. Ki Allah hashachar, because dawn is breaking. Vayomer lo ashalechacha ki im beirachtani, I will not let you go unless you have blessed me. I'm going to read this quickly, it's already 1 o'clock. Vayomer elav mashemecha, what's your name? Vayomer, he says, Yaakov. And he says, we're not going to call your name Yaakov anymore, but Yisrael, because you have wrestled with God and have prevailed. We have to go through this again. We'll pick up again with this next week. Very, very interesting placement of this whole story. This whole story obviously needs its own session. We'll do this next week, Mirtz Hashem. We'll go through, phrase by phrase, this whole episode. But it's in the midst of Yaakov's preparation. All of a sudden, it's night. He has to send everybody across the river. He gets left alone, and then we'll deal with this. So Mirtz Hashem, we'll deal with this element, which is again a sub-story within Yaakov's preparation of meeting with his brother. We have this whole fighting with the angel story, and then we'll actually get to the meeting. So in other words, just again, putting the skeleton of our stories, we have Yaakov's preparing to meet his brother. As a sub-story there, we have this battle with this man that he wrestles with. And then we'll have the actual meeting, which are the pink sheets, once they actually get together, just to keep everything in order. Okay, we'll meet on Mirtzah Shem next week. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.